Philip Agee knows a great deal about how U.S. intelligence works and how the U.S. government attempts to control image and substance by the use of subversion, disinformation, and the violent overthrow of uncooperative governments. Agee was, in fact, an officer for the Central Intelligence Agency for 11 years from 1957 to 1968 until he quit in protest of CIA and U.S. government policies. Agee is the author of several books, including Inside the Company, CIA Diary, and Dirty Work, the CIA in Western Europe. He now lives in Cuba and joins us from his offices in Havana. Philip Agee, welcome to Flashpoints.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Nice to be back.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I have a number of questions I want to ask you about Cuba and the global war of terror, but first, we are watching the United States and the West move towards war against Iraq. I'm wondering if I could get a former CIA agent's analysis of what this looks like. If you were still working for the CIA, what you might be doing now in preparation for war?
Of course, there's battle planned and order of battle. I would think that the Pentagon is very much involved in this, and the CIA would be playing a supporting role in determining and outlining the order of battle for the targeting inside Iraq once this action begins in a strong way.
There was this sort of roadside sniper murder kill in Yemen, unmanned drone killing alleged terrorist. Is that a new jump for the CIA, or is that consistent with former CIA action?
I believe that's new. That's the first case I've heard of in which the drone was used to attack a car going across the desert. And as I recall reading, there may have been an American in that car. But in any case where Iraq is concerned, certainly the CIA is involved in trying to determine the movements of Saddam Hussein, because I think one of the first things they're going to try to do is eliminate Saddam Hussein in order to demoralize or chop off the leadership of the Iraqi military.
How is this action similar in terms of dealing with friendly dictators, similar to actions we've seen in the past in Africa, in Asia, in Eastern Europe? Is there a consistency of policy here in terms of friendly dictators, imperialism, seizing control of resources?
Well, certainly it's all about money, just like the Afghan war is still going on, and it's all about oil. And this, too, is about petroleum resources in Iraq in the end. The CIA is very much in the forefront of the tools that the United States has to work with in terms of imposing its policy around the world. This hasn't changed very much. What has changed, I think, is the technology, such as the use of a drone to go after a single car crossing the desert, for example. I think that the role of the CIA is pretty much the same as it always was in terms of political control through the back door. These days, I believe it works very much in tandem with the National Endowment for Democracy.
And how is that?
In the 1950s and 60s, the money that came to NGOs, they were not known as NGOs at that time, but they would be what is considered to be NGOs today. And these are the voluntary associations. They're the women's organizations, the trade unions, the youth and student movements, the professional and cultural societies, and the poll monitoring organizations, which in some cases, as in Peru and in Mexico as well, have come to coalesce into political parties. The money for these organizations that comes from the United States government, and which earlier was secret CIA money, now comes from the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED for short. The NED and this U.S. government money is not philanthropic contributions. The key word has always been control, and NED does not have its people in the place in Lima, Peru, for example, or in Mexico City, or in other countries, in order to follow the day-to-day use of the money. That would have to be done by some other organization, and the logical actor in this is the CIA, which can be in a clandestine contact with the people who receive the money and spend it in order to be able to control the spending of the money and to evaluate the use of the dollars. There's not only a program which is approved and the money is given, but there has to be an evaluation constantly of the effectiveness of this type of funding. And I cannot imagine any other organization but the CIA to be doing this and to be directing and controlling the operation on a day-to-day basis.
Are you seeing any disinformation story that sticks out as something that is bogus or concerns you greatly in terms of information flows?
Yes, but this did not come from a private source. I'm thinking, for example, of the accusations against Cuba for having a developmental program in biological warfare. This came from one of the top officials in the government. And in fact, he happens to be one of the people who was at work in Miami during the follow-up to the elections in 2000, one of the key actors in the victory for Bush. These charges against Cuba in such things as biological warfare and possibly chemical warfare are totally false. They're fairy tales, but they provide the atmosphere for continuing the idea that Cuba is a bogeyman in terms of U.S. security. It's no threat at all to the United States, but it has to be made to be seen to be a threat so that the embargo can continue and so that those rich Miami extremists will continue to line the pockets of politicians in Washington.
Well, we're going to talk more about Cuba now. We're speaking with Philip Agee. He's a former CIA officer of some 12 or 13 years. He now works and lives in Cuba. He's talking to us from Havana. Philip Agee, on November 19th, Fidel Castro headed a mass protest of over some 150,000 people or more, an anti-imperialist tribunal. Could you talk about the mood of that protest and what it was about?
The protest was about the five Cuban prisoners in the United States who were convicted, I think four of them, to life sentences for having penetrated the Miami terrorist community, that is the extremist Cuban exile community in Miami, in order to prevent them from carrying out terrorist acts against Cuba. It was also against the continuing embargo of Cuba. There were a number of reasons for this demonstration, and it all came together in less than 48 hours. It was quite a sight to see.
Now, what were some of the key motivating things beyond that you described? Say more about the case being made against Cuba to isolate Cuba, to broad brush Cuba, as the United States goes ahead full force to seize all resources in the world.
The policy with respect to the United States toward Cuba has not changed very much with this Bush administration. It is similar to what has been U.S. policy ever since the early 1960s, and that is the effort to isolate the Cuban Revolution, to prevent the Cuban example from being a good example for other countries in Latin America, and it was fairly successful for some years, particularly those years when I was in the CIA. However, we've seen the recent elections in Brazil. We saw the elections in Venezuela several times, which ratified Chavez in the job as president there. Now we've seen the most recent elections in Ecuador. These elections show that the trend is very much in favor of the left in Latin America and against the free trade area of the Americas. Cuba is one of the leading nations in Latin America, which is organizing others to oppose and to eventually defeat this program, which, in their view, is nothing more than the annexation of the economies of the Latin American countries to that of the United States and to their disadvantage.
How do you see the U.S. government using the war on terrorism as a cover to, once and for all, crush the Cuban spirit, and will they be able to do it?
There's no doubt that they are trying to use this question of terrorism against Cuba. Cuba itself has taken very strong stands against terrorism because they have been the victims of probably more terrorism than any other country in the world. Most of that terrorism began in the early 1960s and was fomented as official policy to be carried out by the CIA. This included assassination plots, it included a whole series of programs of sabotage and of burning cane fields and of burning down the most important department stores here in Havana. Cuba has been a major victim of terrorism through all these years. They have come out for a very long time against terrorism, and they came out extremely strongly against the September 11th attacks in New York and Washington. So where the Cubans are concerned, they take a very clear stand. The problem is that the United States keeps them on the list of nations that are supporting terrorism because there are, for one example, a number of Americans who are living here and who are considered in the United States to be fugitives from the law. That is, people who have hijacked airliners, for example. But that's not the case with Cubans who do it here and take those planes to the United States, as has just occurred about 2 weeks ago. A crop dusting plane was taken by a pilot and flown to Key West, and the people have been given asylum there, or have been given immigrant status. So the United States seems to have a double policy here. On the one hand, they charge the Cubans with certain things, and when they do the very same thing themselves, they say, no, this is our policy for giving refuge to Cuban people.
Philip Agee, don't I remember correctly that there was, in fact, a Cuban airliner that was shot down with members of the Cuban fencing team by people who were associated with the U.S. government?
This happened in early October of 1976, Dennis. It was an airliner that took off from Barbados on the way to Havana. And just outside Barbados after takeoff, it exploded, and all 73 people aboard were killed, including the Cuban fencing team that had just won a championship in Venezuela. The intellectual author or planner of that attack was Orlando Bosch, a pediatrician who had lived for a long time in Miami. He was convicted of that crime in Venezuela, and he disappeared. He turned up again in Miami, and the Justice Department recommended that he be expelled from the country as being one of the worst terrorists around the world. He wasn't expelled. He was given all sorts of considerations, and eventually Bush's father pardoned him. This gives you an idea of the concern for terrorists in Washington when the president pardons a convicted terrorist like Orlando Bosch. It's only one of many attacks. It's one of the more egregious of the attacks against Cuba, but it certainly was happened, and it was clearly traced to the Cubans in Miami.
Now, let me just get this straight. We're talking about shooting an airliner out of the air, killing over 70 people. The designer of the plane comes to the United States, and he's pardoned by Bush 1?
That's right. There's much more to this case than I mentioned already, because one of the perpetrators of the case was Luis Posada Carriles, a former CIA operative who was involved with the Bay of Pigs and for years afterwards with the agency. He has made a living, or that is a career, let's say, of international terrorism, based in El Salvador and Guatemala most recently. About 3 years ago, he was caught with explosives in Panama just before Fidel Castro and others were to be there for the Ibero-American summit. The plan was to bomb a meeting where Fidel was going to be speaking to students at the University of Panama. The man is still in jail there in Panama, has not been brought to trial yet, and there have been all kinds of efforts on the part of the Miami Cubans, that is, the ones that are the most extremist of all, to prevent him ever being brought to trial in Panama. The same man, Posada Carriles, was the man who organized, and he admitted this to the New York Times in an interview, he is the one who organized the bombing of Cuban hotels, Havana hotels, during 1997 and during that period. There were 7 or 8 hotels bombed here. They were done by Salvadoran mercenaries. One Italian tourist was killed. They were trying to create fear in the minds of people who might be traveling to Cuba. Posada Carriles said he got the money from the Cuban American National Foundation people in Miami and then had recruited these mercenaries to carry out the bombing attacks here in Havana.
We're speaking to Philip Agee, former CIA officer. He's talking to us from Havana, Cuba. I guess I'm incredibly concerned when I hear the name Luis Posada Carriles. I also think of the name Otto Reich. Currently, Mr. Reich is the head of policy for the Bush administration for Latin America and the Caribbean. I understand that Otto Reich played a role in helping Luis Carriles come to El Salvador to participate with the death squad activities there.
Yes, Otto Reich has Posada Carriles' fingerprints all over him, as well as a number of others. His background in this extremist Miami community is very well documented. It happens that as you may know, Reich's appointment has lapsed, and he is out of that job now. Bush has not reappointed him, as far as I know, and they have appointed him instead as a roving ambassador of sorts to Latin America. Whatever role he may continue to play where U.S. policy toward Latin America is concerned is unclear at the moment. There is an acting assistant secretary who was under Reich before. The signs are that Bush is going to let Reich sink under the weight of his own past and will be appointing perhaps someone else.
Again, Philip Agee, let's get back to the situation in Cuba. If the United States tries to use this war on terrorism to undermine Cuba, what will they find? What's the spirit of the Cuban people at the moment, given the economic situation? Will it be easier for the United States to come at Cuba?
I would say no. I think that the spirit of the people here is very good. I'm out in the street with them every single day, and I'm trying to bring Americans here through our travel services operation online at cubalinda.com. We are bringing Americans here. We bring groups every week. In fact, every day we're bringing Americans, and they often, if they haven't been here before, they come with preconceived notions of what they're going to find here. And one of the most interesting things in what I'm doing right now is to meet these people when they first come, watch them change as they go through the days and nights that they spend here. They leave with a totally different opinion of what's happening in Cuba and what the Cuban Revolution is trying to do. They begin to see that it's an ongoing experiment, that it's a work in progress, and that if they know anything about the rest of Latin America, they will see that Cuba shines out as a brilliant example of what you can do if you get organized and if you establish and maintain your independence from the United States. Where terrorism is concerned, the United States, this administration at least, is continuing to try to tar Cuba with this brush of having association with terrorism, which is completely untrue, but it provides the cover for a lot of other types of aggressive activities against Cuba.
I wonder what the mood is on the ground in terms of the government and the people, the use of Guantanamo Bay to illegally hold those prisoners. How is that playing on the ground? What's the response there?
I don't think people are terribly concerned about the use of Guantanamo. Everybody here knows that Guantanamo was taken by force and that it has been held by force ever since. Since the triumph of the revolution here in 1959, the Cubans have demanded the return of Guantanamo, and they have refused to cash the annual payments, which are a joke these days. But there were payments established in 1903, I believe, when the United States seized that base as a condition for getting U.S. troops out of Cuba after the Spanish-American War. In any case, people aren't so concerned, and everybody knows that the Al-Qaeda people there are being treated inhumanly. And, of course, that galls the Cubans, but they know they can do nothing about it, so they just have to sit aside and watch it happen.
Back to travel. Is Cuba a good place for Americans to come for a winter vacation? How will the Cuban people treat them?
The Cuban people are fascinated with Americans. I don't think there's any other nationality which quite captures the imagination of Cubans like the United States does, like Americans do. And as far as a place to visit, it is absolutely fascinating here. It is a unique place. There are many, many things to do. We have a very interesting cycling program because the countryside is so beautiful. We take people out on 7 and 10 day trips. Just walking around Old Havana is an experience that I don't think one would find anywhere else in the world. And of course, the most important thing about Cuba as a place to visit is that it is safe. I don't know of a country that is safer on the streets than Cuba is. People come here and they can walk the streets anywhere in town, day and night, and never be worried. There's no feeling of fear when you're walking around in Havana. You know you're perfectly safe. And of course, in terms of food and water, almost no one has any problem with respect to intestinal disorders. So you have just the perfect combination of a relaxing, safe place with extremely interesting things to see and to do.
And finally, I want to get back to your world view. Tell us what your greatest concerns are as you watch this, what is an obvious march towards war. What's on your mind?
Dismay, I believe, would be the best way to put it. There were steps along the way in the 1990s to put the religious right in power in Washington. And it was hard for me to believe at the time that that could ever happen. But in actual fact, with Ashcroft and others in this administration, the religious right has never been in a stronger position trying to impose their own moral beliefs on the rest of the country. This turns into a type of Manichaean crusade of good versus evil and nothing in between. When Bush says you're either with us or you're with the terrorists, he's trying to present that worldview to not only the American people, but to the rest of the world as well. It's a veiled threat that if you don't join up with us, you're going to be in serious trouble because you'll be in the same category for us as are the terrorists. This is dismaying. It's appalling. It's absurd, but it's the policy. It happens to be the policy of the government in power today, elected or not elected. I take this administration as being an appointed administration, a president appointed by five justices of the Supreme Court, not elected by the people. Illegitimate, in other words. But in any case, they're in power, they have the power, and the policies that they are carrying out are, as I say, simply appalling, and we must oppose them with all the resources we can muster.
All right, Philip Agee, again, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. You are a former CIA officer, now living in Havana, Cuba, and we thank you so much for being with us on Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.